This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
There's an interesting thing about aging. We can actually accept our body's aging quite well, but when it comes to memory loss, we have absolutely no tolerance for that or for the aging process. Today's show is all about aging. It's all about the memory loss associated with it. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and today I'm talking about why do we forget things, such as where did we put our keys, or did we remember to turn off the oven when we left, or did the garage door go down? And then while all of this is actually a part of the natural aging process itself, it isn't easy for us to mentally accept it. And it really isn't easy for us to be able to live with it because it so strongly impacts our self-esteem and our self-confidence. All those little times where we can't remember something goes in and it plants this little seed. What does this mean? What does this mean? And it builds on itself to the point where our confidence is such that we do double check and double check and triple check and double check again and triple check. And then also what we do is we make notes. My goodness gracious. I realized the other day I've got notes all over my house. Trying to remind me of the different things that I have to do, when I have to do them, the time I have to do them, and I've even got to the point where I put down where I need to go to find what I need to do in order to be able to do it. So you can see that it really is an insidious process, meaning that it really builds off of itself. But one of the things I'm going to talk about today is I'm going to talk about this memory loss that we experience as we're aging, but it isn't memory loss that's associated with dementia or is associated with Alzheimer's. Understanding, I'm going to talk about those as well, understanding that those are potentially the outcome of what we're experiencing. It doesn't mean what we're experiencing is specifically that outcome. I'm also going to be taking your calls, so if you have a question for me about your medical intuitive, about your medical intuitive skills, if you're medical intuitive, would you please call me so you can help me remember who I am? Ha! That just made me laugh. You know, universe has a great way of lightening you up when you need to. If you want me to share my medical intuitive skills with you, and you have a question for me about your health, or a question about relationships or career, or where did you put those keys, or what can you do to improve this memory, then please give me a call at 877-230-3062. That number is good for U.S. callers, Canadian callers, and then also international callers. Of course, all you have to do then is just dial your international calling code and then 877-230-3062. I also want to let you know that I have posted my audio download of the ABCs of Surefire and Lasting Weight Loss. It's the telegathering that I had in the month of January. Outstanding program, 90 minutes chock full of information about how to be able to lose weight by actually eating more and not less, but just eating the right things. And on this 90-minute program, I had a special guest, Dr. Susan Smith-Jones. She's a natural living expert and has been really working with the aspect of weight loss and vitality and energy and even coming in and helping the mind through the different activities, the foods that we eat, the exercise that we do, because body-mind really is connected. So in this 90-minute telegathering on this audio, Dr. Susan's going to be sharing her perception of the right foods that we can eat and then also how to jumpstart your metabolism. And then I'm going to be coming in and also being involved in the telegathering and talking about some of the emotional contributors that actually can sabotage our weight loss goal. And what I mean by that is that we can be eating right and exercising right, but if we can't manage our thoughts and we can't change our behavior around those sabotaging, destructive activities and habits that we have from a mental standpoint, then it's really difficult for us to be able to go in and lose weight. We can try, but we can never quite get there. And those extra pounds that have been hanging on and taking up residency for a long period of time actually come in and they start, You know, we want to get rid of those pounds, but they just want to keep lingering. And then I also, and Dr. Susan does as well, we also talk about the role of self-esteem. And self-esteem is really an integral part of why we gain weight, why we hang on to weight, and then also why we can lose weight. And then other things, we have tips on how to be able to increase your stamina, and one that I really loved in the gathering and that I've received a lot of positive feedback is it's a process of losing weight. We have to do it mentally, emotionally, and physically, as well as energetically in order to be able to get there. And it's very important while we're in that process to get in there and to really learn to love our body where it is at the moment and not go in and just keep telling it, what's the matter with you? Why aren't you losing the weight? What's the matter with the mind? Why can't we do it? That actual berating, that actual focus on the negative instead of the results that you're looking for actually undermines self-esteem. And what it does is it causes those pounds to continue to hang on. So if you're interested in purchasing the 90-minute audio download of the ABCs of Surefire and Lasting Weight Loss, then you can go to my website, www.ritberger.com. And then also to let you know, there is a try before you buy. You can actually listen to a very brief excerpt of the telegathering. Be sure it's what's right for you. And I always say to people, one of the ways that you measure whether this would be a purchase that would be worthwhile is that Dr. Susan shared how you could lose 20 to 30 pounds in 3 months by eating more, eating the right foods instead of having to go into that starvation. So very, very interesting telegathering, and I hope that you enjoy what you're going to learn from it. So when we talk about memory loss actually is a natural part of the aging process. However, what we lose in the form of our memory isn't really general in nature. It's a very specific kind of memory loss that we experience. And in fact, we actually have many different kinds of memory loss that causes the brain to be able to go to different parts of the brain to recall what it needs to do. The first type of memory that we have is called procedural memory. And this is the memory that teaches us how to walk, how to eat, how to tie a bow, how to tie our shoes. This procedural memory is the part of us that we start learning and developing and build on over the course of our life, from when we learn to tie our shoes, or we learn to hold a glass, or we learn to brush our teeth, or we learn to take a bath or a shower, all of those things that we do on a repetitive basis that is very, very important and specific to our well-being and being able to get through the day from that procedural standpoint. Then there's also something called somatic memory. And this actually covers facts that, such as identifying keys and eyeglasses and or a color or remembering what's in your closet. I know my husband always says to me, Carol, how can you possibly remember everything that's in your closet or all the jewelry that you have? Well, one of the things is in that somatic memory is that that part of the memory really goes in and stores the memory that's associated with the things that are important to us, not the things that are urgent to us, but the things that are important to us. And in that somatic memory, then when we get to a place where we have to recall something, such as our glasses and being able to see that there are newest glasses or old glasses, all of these things are part of the somatic memory. And then also they're a part of our ability to be able to function on a daily basis. Now, the third kind of memory is called episodic memory. And this is the memory that actually is stored, that covers our experiences that we've had within a short period of time. The episodic memory is actually stored in a specific part of the brain, and that part of the brain is a very active part of the brain that we use on a daily basis. And that episodic memory, what it does is it goes in, it helps us remember where we left things. It's that part of the memory that uses incoming data to be able to match to old data and then to be able to tell us how to respond and react. We use this episodic memory. Again, another part of it is that, you know, what's a person's name? And that's something that as we get older, that we tend to lose that ability. We can be talking to someone and inside our brain it's going, now what is that person's name? What is that person's name? How am I going to be able to do this? What is that person's name? And that part of it becomes very, very repetitive. Now, as it's becoming repetitive, it's helping us call up the memory so we can recognize the face and put a name to it. But it's that repetitive, episodic aspect of that memory that gets in, and the more that it tries to remember the person's name, the more difficult it is for us to remember the person's name, and it actually triggers a fight-or-flight response in the physical body. Now, not only are we trying to remember the person's name, but we have chemical chaos going on in the body because we're beginning to feel anxious, and we're almost to the point in that memory bank that we're hoping that the other person doesn't remember our name, because if they called me Carol, then I'm going to feel really uncomfortable if I can't remember their name and address them back to their name. So the episodic memory is that short-term memory, and it's that part that we go to in a repetitive way to be able to look at things that we're bringing in, data coming in, and matching it to something in a short-term memory. This type of memory is something that we lose with aging, but I also am going to talk about at the end of the show what we can do to restore this part of the memory. And what we're finding is the more we're multitasking in the field of the neurosciences, what we're finding is it used to be associated primarily with aging. But what we're finding now is that the episodic memory loss seems to be happening earlier and is more extreme or severe because we're really doing a lot of multitasking. And if you think of this part of the memory as basically coming in and taking data and matching it, the more things we're doing simultaneously, the more activity that it causes this part of the brain to do, and the more stress responses we're getting, the chemical changes in the body as a result. So interesting research says that this may not really have anything to do with the aging as we used to think about it, but it may have to do more with the multitasking that we're doing at this day and age. And I want to also share that in the preparation for this show, that this episodic memory loss used to be where we would start to see it at 55, 60, 65, more of it, 70, quite a bit of it. Now we're finding that 18-year-olds and even down to 12-year-olds are beginning to get some of this memory loss. Now, we may think that they've just want to not remember something, but the reality of it is the more that we're multitasking, the more it's burning out, and we're beginning to see an increase in this burnout in this episodic memory aspect. At 25, it seems to be coming much more significant as we take on so many more of the demands of life. So let me explain why this episodic memory in even a different anatomical way starts to erode and deteriorate the way it does. Our brain is basically a 3.5-pound blob of really cholesterol and neurons and nerve synapses and a lot of activity. It requires a lot of protein. It requires to be stimulated. There's a lot of blood vessels and so forth. So this 3.5-pound blob actually has we've measured somewhat, 100 billion neurons that are actually zapping around the brain very, very wildly, sending each other electrochemical signals that basically make up our memory. With time or with multitasking, these signals actually weaken along in these nerve synapses. But then what occurs is the brain basically becomes tired. It becomes burned out. And we do know, as we've been associating with the aging, that the brain actually starts shrinking slowly over the course of the rest of our life from about 30 years of age and beyond. We're not aware that this actual shrinking is happening. Now, I'm going to share something right now, is that we do know anatomically that the brain will shrink to some small percentage from 30 years of age and beyond. But in the new field of neuroscience that's now really understanding the dynamics of the brain, we know that while the brain may be shrinking in size, as the body does in its size, the skeletal structure compresses and so forth, we know in neurogenesis is that the brain, unlike we believed before, is actually creating new brain cells every day. And those brain cells are basically come in where they have no memory associated with them, and they're just basically waiting for us to add an experience and a memory and an emotion to that particular experience, and it reprograms or actually programs that new cell. So we know now that if we stay dynamically involved in the learning process, that these cells are going to be created in greater numbers. They are created, and what they do is that we have the capacity to program them in the habits, the emotions that we would like them to be versus them automatically going in and reprogramming the way that they were before they became new. And that's something that the human body does. We also know through neuroplasticity is that, yes, you have 100 billions of these neurons that are zapping around in the brain that create neural pathways that are really going to come in and to show the brain how to take information, connect it with the pathway, and then put that information on that neural pathway. In that process, the information coming in may be different but similar enough to either in the thought or the behavior or the emotion that the brain automatically assumes, which is a positive thing in one way because then it saves us brain energy trying to think things through. But many times it makes mistakes from the standpoint that it categorizes that incoming information and puts it on a neural pathway to a neural storage place called the hippocampus to where we can go in and we can recall that memory when we need to. So while we know all of the shrinkage happens, we know that the neurons basically can start to short circuit, they can fizzle out, but also to let you know there really is hope in this whole process of memory loss as long as we do what we need to in order to keep those new cells being reproduced at a very fast pace, that's learning, and then how we create our habits and the thoughts we create and positive emotions. I'm going to talk more about that in the last segment of the show. The reason that we experience episodic memory lapse is loss is because it relies heavily on the frontal lobes of the brain because that's where we gather information. And when that part of the brain becomes overloaded, then what happens is we lose our ability to recall short-term memory. The left frontal lobe of the brain is what we call the conscious mind, and it is that part of the brain that is its responsibility is to take incoming data and match it with past experiences. That part of the memory we refer to as short-term memory. That memory usually has a memory bank or an archive of 2 to 3 years of experiences that have not only behavior, thought, but also emotion. And then we can hold those memories, those experiences, for 3 years before it goes into long-term. Or what we can do is that we can come in and actually use that part of the brain more readily. So think of that part of the brain as kind of a hard drive, and that's full of repetitive experiences. And when we reach a point where there's basically no more room on the hard drive, we're going to have to go in and we're going to have to let go of some of the things we're hanging on to. Now, we can do that mindfully, but the brain will automatically do it once it becomes overloaded. It's going to take information and experiences you haven't used or you do so on rote, as we call it, and it puts it in another part of the brain. So when you need it, the brain just has to go back to a different part of the computer archive in order to be able to really call up what they want to. So in that particular case, it's really a good news. There's things that we can do about it. So what we can do is we can just go into that learning process of how we can use that part of the memory and then renew it by putting in new thoughts and new emotions. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, and I'm going to continue on in talking about memory loss and talking about the connection with Alzheimer's and then also dementia. What is the connection? But right now what I want to do is I want to jump in. Hi, Gail from North Carolina. How can I help you, hon?
Thank you. I'm so excited. Good morning. Are you doing well?
I am. And good. How about you? You know, I have to say in all honesty, I'm kind of hanging on, sweetie, with all of this energy chaos that's going on. How about you?
same thing. I'm so glad to connect with you. I was listening to you the other day, and I was thinking this is having an impact on her like it is me and everybody else,
oh.
I suppose.
You know, it is. And in fact, it's very interesting because one of the things that I've really realized is the more sensitive we are with, you know, we call ourselves empathic, but the more sensitive we are, the more we're kind of like these little energetic dust bunnies that we're taking on all this intensity of emotion that's really just running kind of in those billions of nerve synapses in the brain all over. And we're being bombarded, and it's like, is it mine? Is it theirs? Where do I go? What's happening here? So absolutely I am. Absolutely. I would love to think that I'm this so highly evolved spiritual being that doesn't have to go through this, especially because I died. I mean, don't you think that I would have gotten an exemption on this or something?
I would think so. It's just kind of not fair, is it?
It just doesn't happen, and I get reminded of that all the time. So how can I help you, sweetie?
Well, you just covered a large area of things I had been sitting here thinking about. I just kind of wanted you to look at me and see if, I have several questions. My main one has to do with a few years back when I had gallbladder surgery. This is crazy. I did just fine with it. And then I went to get a bone scan, and they, of course, learned that I was already beginning with the osteoporosis, which was a total shock because of the I didn't know at the time that if you were dealing with adrenal exhaustion that, you know, if the body doesn't get what it needs from somewhere, it's going to get it from somewhere else. And
that's correct.
I'm thinking that that's probably where the osteoporosis came in. But when I was on the table getting this bone scan done, the lady in there doing it says, "Whoa." And I said, "Is there a problem?" Because she was kind of, there was a wall separating us. And she asked me, was I aware that I had a hook in my stomach? Well, trying to figure out all these energetic connections and cords, and, you know, I've always been more interested in the energetic part of things as opposed to the physical part and how it's going to affect me later on. And when she got through with the scan, I went in there and looked at it, and you could actually see, just as clear as a bell, a white hook in the area where they had removed my gallbladder. And the guy had given me 5 little nicks instead of 3, and so I asked the surgeon when I went back in there, "Why did you do it 5 times instead of 3? He says, "Because your liver wasn't where I thought it was going to be."
No, that happens. That
and
does
I said,
happen.
Well, where the heck was it? And he said, he just laughed, and he said, "It's that your liver is huge." And I thought, thank you, God, for giving me, because I thought that the liver was the instrument that was going to help me, you know, get through all these emotional things through the years.
Exactly.
That was my line of thinking. But I never gave that white hook thing any more thought because I did well with it. I never had any problems. And the other day, I got it on my mind because my favorite niece was having gallbladder surgery. I went to bed that night, and just having the thought of her, I started hurting in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, that's Mary Beth, that's not you, just roll over and go to sleep.
Exactly.
And it stopped hurting. But then yesterday, I was actually talking to her on the phone about when I had gallbladder surgery. She's doing nursing, and she says, "Aunt Gail, they don't put any kind of anything in there." She says, I've watched them do the surgery before. They just take it out, and then they, like, cauterize it." She said, "There shouldn't be a hook in there." And when I got off the phone with her, immediately in that spot where I'm now holding my hand on it, a little rash has come. It actually began to hurt for a minute or two until I started having these thoughts to God and the archangels and whatnot, you know, and then I knew to just thank them and whatever situation it was to that maybe I did need to, in fact, call that surgeon, but it's been a few years ago, and I don't know. So I was just wondering if you could actually see to that degree. I know I did not dream it, Carol. I saw it on my own, and now someone has told me, no, there's not supposed to be a hook in there. They've left something in there. It's going to cause you problems. You better go to the doctor.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say to you is that when the mind, your mind, my mind, anybody's mind, gets to the point where that doubt has been planted in your brain and you can't emotionally, mentally and emotionally reconcile it, the next thing that has to happen is go find the information that you're looking for so you can stop the mind from fixating on it. And that's, you know, whether it's going back to the doctor or it's other ways to look at it, that's the most important, because what will happen, sweetie, is when anybody else, you could be in a grocery store and somebody says, oh, talking to somebody else, I had gallbladder surgery and I'm having problems. It's going to come up. So the first thing is I'm just going to say to you that as long as it fixates and it comes up, then call the surgeon, do what you need to find out what it is. I can actually, I can't see the hook, which is interesting. And I've been, because I'm usually to the point where honestly I can, you're not blocking me. But what I can tell you is that it isn't a one size fits all. Gallbladder surgery depends on the surgeon. It depends on the surgeon's training. It depends on the surgeon's process. So while hooks usually aren't used, those, and they're actually not hooks, they're staples. While staples aren't used,
you can actually, it's a white hook.
Yeah.
I mean, it showed up clear as a bell, and it was big.
And what it is,
because when I was leaving the office that day, I was thinking, well, I, my ex-husband's name is Bob, and I was thinking to myself, this is crazy. I've always said he has me hook, line, and sinker, and now I have the physical.
And there it is. Doggone it. What could I do? Well, in this particular process, it looks like to me that what we have is we have that kind of that staple aspect of what it is. One part of it has degenerated. One part of it basically doesn't exist. So the body has, you know, the body's exquisite. It's taking care of it. So in that particular aspect of it, I too can pick it up and I can see part of it energetically, but I can't see it real clear. And that lets me know, and again, you're not blocking me, sweetie. It just lets me know that the body, the mind, and also the soul part of you is saying that you don't need, soul saying, well, you don't need to be in there hook, line, and sinker with him anymore, Gail. The body is in there going, I don't know what to do with this, so I'm going to just go in and I'm going to put it at a place where it's really not going to create a problem, meaning that we're not going to have it going through the bloodstream. We're not going to have it anywhere else. So it's kind of like it got stored there. And then the mind's going in and saying, this is irritating. And it's irritating because it's there. So what your soul is doing is it's bringing awareness that this is something that you're mindfully fixating on, and that what your soul is doing is bringing that information, that energetics, to the surface of the skin. That's the rash itself. Now, interestingly enough, that rash is not tied to what's in your stomach.
That was the other thing I was going to ask you. Did it have to do with that tick-borne illness, which once in a while... It's ehrlichiosis is what it is, and I never, I just totally ignore it, and I work on my immune system because I don't want, I just don't, I don't believe that any of these things are chronic, but it keeps telling me occasionally it is.
Well, look at it this way. It's basically telling you, get in your skin. It's basically telling you, you're very sensitive. You do want to be of service to others. You're very empathic. And it's basically telling you to get in your skin. Now, anytime we have something physically surface on the skin, the body is trying to get rid of whatever the irritant or the inflammation is to get it out to the pores of the skin, because then what we do is mentally it creates awareness, but it also allows us to add something topically, change something diet-wise, whatever it may be. The thing that is on your skin is directly tied to that. If you look at where you've been in the last 3 weeks with all of this, there's a lot of emotional energy and distress and a lot of old things that are coming to the surface. Exactly. Well, and you're finished with it. So I always say to people, when it comes to the surface, you're finished with it because you've done everything you need to on multiple levels. And what your soul and what your body is doing is saying, here, it's to the surface. Let's get rid of it. We can't get rid of it if it stays inside. Sometimes it has to come to the surface. So going back in, the thing
I
is,
I want to tell you this though about the other physical thing with me this summer. I got the worst case of shingles in the most horrible areas.
Yes.
I have never experienced anything like that. And I also know that, you know, the skin irritation, it's like I wish I had never learned any of these connections to things.
I do know that one, honey.
Because why am I presenting with it all physically?
Yeah, well, because it requires us to do this work to be in our skin. It requires us to recognize.
What am I supposed to do with it? Which leads me to the next question, which is, the last time I had you on the phone, I was the last caller instead of the first, and you mentioned neurobiogenesis.
Yes.
And I keep looking on your website, and I'm just not, you know, I'm not getting any
work. It's not there. Isn't it fascinating? Because, honey, that's my work. That's the next level of my work. I've done my clinicals. I've done everything. And it's kind of like you. I just can't seem to get there. And I keep thinking, why? My research scientists, all the different things that I'm supposed to have done before I go in and do this, everything is done. Why am I not getting there? And it's kind of like with you and with all of us. Is I have to get in my body. I have to not keep being this floating, walking head of intelligence that's going around. And I have to actually start practicing what I'm doing. I'm writing my scripts now for it. They're actually helping me. Go figure.
Yeah, but I'm always comparing myself to you. I'm thinking, my God, she deals with this daily. She can't even look at a person normally or see them normally, you know. And I'm thinking, if she can do this, I can do this.
Well, let me tell you.
I'm going to figure out what to do with this.
Yeah.
And
I've come in, and excuse me for interrupting, but what I've come in and realized, and thank you, Gail, for bringing this up, it's with all of us, is that our work in doing all of this is to get clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Our work is once we get clarity to put a vision to whatever that clarity is.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we put together the vision, then we have to use intention of energy, attention on our mind. We have to use motivation. We have to create a plan. And every day we have to execute that plan, whether it's 30 seconds, 3 minutes, 3 hours, or all day. And what I find for me, and I find with the energy now, and I'm going to apply it back very quickly to your body, and then we're going to take a commercial break, is that in this process is that we forget to check that plan. And if we check the plan, and I check my plan on neurobiogenesis, everything is in place, honey, except every day something comes in and preempts it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go in and I realize that it's preempting it, then what I do is I can say, okay, get back into the saddle, Carol, and do it. And when I do that, then it moves forward, and I'm closer and closer and closer, but I need to work at it every day. So what does this have to do with your body, sweetie? So let's get that, and I'm going to go to a commercial break. In this particular process is that it is real. What you are experiencing is not tied to what you have in your stomach. It is not tied to shingles, but it is an indicator that it's important for you to ground yourself, whatever that is. Go back and look at your plan. What do you need to do on a daily basis to ground yourself? Not work, but what do you need to ground yourself? Because we need to feed those inner resources.
Mm-hmm.
The gallbladder is tied to what I call our room of secrets, all of those parts of ourself that we feel and say to ourselves that we don't want anybody to know, we store in the gallbladder.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And then what we do is also
I thought it just stored resentment and anger and that kind of thing.
And shame. Absolutely. But the resentment is resentment we have toward ourselves. The shame can be initiated by somebody else saying something simply, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
But what it can also do is we go in and go, oh, Why did I do that? What is wrong with me? I know better than that. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. And we literally become galled with our own self as we become galled with everybody else.
Yeah.
So that gallbladder really stores a lot of that inner angst that we have that is emotionally stored there.
I did not want him to remove it. I begged him. I said, look, just go in there and suck the stones out. I need that gallbladder.
Well, the nice part of it is that
he wouldn't do it.
Well, and the reason he would do it is because of the stones. But even more so, sweetie, is that it was full of stuff. It was full of things that you didn't need anymore. And when it went, all those things went. Where you are now is it's kind of like that mind. It's trying to figure out where do I put all these things that irritate me about me? That's what we have going on with the rash itself. Why does it do all that? And that's the way the process works. So mm-hmm. What I can say is when you mentally fixate, look at your information. Not one size fits all. Anatomically, we are set in the basic parameters and areas of the body where things should be, but they don't always know until they get in, and sometimes it's an oops once they get in. When they go in and it's an oops, they may surgically work with it. They may use dissolvable staples, or they may use staples that don't dissolve in a quick period of time. There's a whole bunch of things that medicine uses.
Mm-hmm.
So from that particular standpoint, what you have going on is you have that in your stomach. You have a niece that you care very, very much about. You know that she's an indigo like you are. You want to be able to help her. All of these things are part of this dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So work with the rash the same way you always have. Support your immune system. Look at you if you can do something topically. It is not shingles, but it is a reoccurring chronic rash.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the hook, call the surgeon up and talk to the surgeon and get that surgeon's opinion. If it isn't what you're looking for or you can't find that surgeon, find another surgeon. Take it the x-rays or whatever you need to them and ask their opinion. That will start you on the path of figuring out how to let it go. The thing is, they will not go in, most likely, surgically remove it.
Oh,
because,
well, it doesn't bother me at all today. Yeah. There's not a problem.
Yeah. Well, today you're in a better space.
From what you've said to me, I'm thinking I don't even need to make a phone call to the bone scan lady or the surgeon.
Well,
I
until it comes up again, and right now, that's truth. Because right now you have a picture of it. Right now you're beginning to connect the dots. So what you do is when it comes up again, go back to this memory, go back to this conversation. If it's still bothering you, then you get to make a decision, shall I go now to them? If it goes away, then no. The thing is that the body will ultimately take this and break it down. It will.
Mm-hmm.
The body is capable of doing that. But again, something for you to try. I'm sorry to cut you short, sweetie. I absolutely love talking to you, and I love the connection. And, oh, my gosh, everything I'm saying to you, it's like, are you listening, Carol? Are you listening, Carol? Yes, I am, Gail. Thank you, sweetheart, for that. Anyway,
I love you dearly.
Oh, and I love you dearly also. And thanks for the reminder, and thanks for the neurobiogenesis. You know, I need to go back to my plan. And, you know, sweetie, pop me an email every so often. Come on and go, woo, Carol. Where is it? But I am going to get it done this year. I need to tell you that. Everything's done. So, all right, light and love to you. Well, please stay tuned. I'm going to be right back after this quick commercial break. I've got another caller, and I'm going to just end the show on what we can do with that episodic memory and how we can get it back.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Well, welcome back if you are just joining me today. Thanks for doing that. And then the second thing is, today I'm talking about the topic of memory loss and why it's so frustrating. And on the other hand, also embarrassing when we can't remember things like people's names, where we put the keys. Oh, this is something that I'm doing quite a bit, and I really probably rationalizing it to being more preoccupied and multitasking. But the reality is I go in and I think of something I need to get in another room. I get in the other room and I can't remember what it is. So I have to go back to the room where I initiated the thought, and lo and behold, poof, there it comes up again. I go back to the room and I find what I'm looking for. So very, very interesting, very funny in a lot of ways, but also extremely embarrassing in many, many cases. And all of those things, whether it gets to the point where it creates worry or it creates that embarrassment or the frustration, everything, all of those things put us in a stress situation, and they really cause the whole dynamics to actually increase to the point where instead of making it better, it actually can make it worse from the standpoint that then we erode our self-confidence around it. So when we can't remember what we're where we've put things or where the keys are and stuff, what we've been dealing with throughout the show is something called episodic memory. Now, episodic memory isn't the part of the dementia or the Alzheimer process. Those are completely different. In dementia, while episodic memory loss can be a precursor for dementia, actual clinical dementia is when we start losing a lot of those procedural memories that we have, how we tie our shoe, how we hold our fork, how we our daily habits that we do. That's the part that we really start to lose in dementia. And then when we go into Alzheimer's, we lose not only the episodic memory, that short term, the procedural memory where we need to have help and able to get through the day, and then that somatic memory where we can recognize things. So while we think that memory loss is going to ultimately lead to the dementia, clinical dementia as it's called, and then also Alzheimer's, it really doesn't. Now, the more we lose the episodic memory, then the more difficult it is to remember some of our daily activities. Then we start really looking into the dementia. And when we get into the dementia part of it, what we do is dementia is really those procedural parts where we really need somebody to be able to help us be tie our shoes or to get dressed or to be able to recognize exactly what we should put on, and that, you know, and then also sometimes as it evolves a little bit more into that somatic is that we shouldn't put on blues and browns and reds altogether. So again, something that we have to look at. Also, I do have a Your Health teleclass that I actually did a teleclass on Alzheimer's disease. I think it's really important if you are experiencing it or worried about it. It's always good to have information, or if you have it in your family, or if you have a family member that has Alzheimer's disease. The audio download of that particular teleclass is 60 minutes in length, and I actually go through and share how, as a medical intuitive, I see it energetically, the psychological aspects behind it, also how it maps in the chakra system, and then also the role of personality. And I have a lot of suggestions that you can use with someone that has Alzheimer's, and then something that you can do to prevent it. And of course, I always look at the clinical aspect of it as well. In addition to the audio download that's available, I have a printable PDF that goes into more detail that I can't cover within the 60 minutes on Alzheimer's disease. And based on, if you're listening to the show, and if you listen to the show in the archives, then you want to know the difference between this episodic memory loss and Alzheimer's, then that would be a good place for you to start. There actually is a Try Before You Buy feature, so you can actually listen to a brief excerpt of the audio and then read a page of the PDF and be sure that it's something that you see that could really be of value for you. If you're interested in that Alzheimer's write-up itself or in the audio, just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. Put the cursor over the tab called Teleclass. You will see that there will be a drop-down that'll say Downloads. Just go down on that page, click on that page, and then go to Alzheimer's. They're alphabetically listed. I have 27 different illnesses that I've featured on my Your Health Teleclasses, and then Try Before You Buy, and then if you purchase it, it's automatically downloaded to your computer. So again, with when we're looking at episodic memory, we're looking at the difference in Alzheimer's, is that you can really start to understand those differences so you don't get concerned. One of the things with episodic memory, one of the main differentiations between it and even dementia as it gets more advanced, or clinical dementia, or we get into Alzheimer's, in episodic memory, you still have the capacity to learn. With clinical dementia, you read to learn, but it's difficult or impossible for you to have that memory to be, or to remember what you've read and that learning process in Alzheimer's, then that ability to learn basically becomes blackened out of the brain's activities, and all you do is repeat old memories. You're going into the hippocampus and pulling up all those long-term memories. So let me go in, and I want to say share some of the things that you can do to be able to keep that mind into the place where it can actually build itself. Remember, I said that the brain actually is able to build new brain cells. That's different than we believe. The brain does shrink, but the brain doesn't shrink as fast when we're building new brain cells. So some of the things that we can do with episodic, the thing that seems to just bug the daylights out of me the most is that I can remember people's energy, but I have difficulty remembering someone's name. Now, I need to tell you that I was a Dale Carnegie instructor on winning friends and influencing people. And the first thing that we always taught people was how to do name association or association to whatever you're doing. And here I am right now looking at energy, and I can't remember people's names. And it's actually very embarrassing to me. And I will just learn to say, you know, I remember your energy, but I can't remember your name. Well, they're pleased that I remember the energy, but the name part really kind of bothers me. So I'm going to go back to some of the Dale Carnegie training that I had, and that's what we call name association. And what you do is when you meet someone for the first time, you're going to have a lot of outside static that's going to be distracting you. But when someone says their name, then associate something to it. So for example, if you meet someone by the name of Jennifer, then what you want to do is you link Jennifer to maybe a movie star. And then maybe you think of Jennifer Lopez, or you think of Jennifer Aniston. So what you do is you take that person's name, you associate it with something that you can remember, and then you take it to the next step of something that you can remember that person's name. And what it does is it tells the brain that when you see this person's face, you're going to think of that movie star, and you're going to think of that person, and you will automatically remember that person's name. Now, I do want to say, in all fairness to the brain and the fairness to you, is the further back in our archives that Jennifer's name becomes, or that face becomes, because you don't see her as frequently as maybe you did a long, long time ago, then what you do is you have to go back deeper into the archives and say something like, you know, when was it that we first met? And then you can go back into those deeper archives. So it's called name association. Works very, very well, very effective. It's something that as you start getting preoccupied, multitasking, or going in and trying to remember things, just connect it. Connect it to something that's memorable and connect it to someone's name. The next most important thing, and really working with the episodic memory, is to get organized. Get your house organized, your task organized, your car organized. All of those things, when you clean out the clutter in your environment, you literally make space and remove clutter from your brain to the point where you don't have to remember, are those keys, did you leave them in the bedroom, are they in your office, oh my gosh, if they're in your office, where are they on a desk or a table, are they under something? So always think of the getting organized as really letting the mind become organized as well. While we are now conditioned to multitask, we're working on the computer, we're doing iPhone, we're texting, we're walking, we're emoting while we're doing all of those things. Multitasking actually wears the brain down and it overloads it. And that's something for you to think about. If you start noticing that you're forgetting things, then what you want to do is you want to go in and whatever you're going to do, you want to focus on, 100% on that particular task. And you want to focus on that task from beginning to end before you start something else. Now, if you're doing something and the phone rings, then what you do is you push that task aside. You put all of your attention on the phone, talking to the person, doing what you're doing. Don't worry about what your computer screen is saying. Don't worry about what's going on in the activities around your house or the noises or anything. Focus on the call. When you hang up the phone, go back and then revisit what you were working on in the task. The mind is able to pick it up exactly where you were, build off of it, and then go and see the task as being done. When you try to do too many things at one time, it basically fries the brain and it creates stress and then it ultimately can create burnout. So maybe you do have a lot of tasks that you have to do on a regular basis. In that particular process, what you do is give that task a time frame, an hour. For an hour, focus on it. When you shut that down, go to the next task. Prioritize those tasks. Go the next one. If it's 5 minutes, 5 minutes focused on that. So very, very important. Staying on one thing until it's completed before starting another is going to retrain the brain to go back and to be able to focus, and it's going to improve concentration. Concentration will improve the episodic memory. So concentrate more. Take on a mental challenge and stick with it. Tests show that even though you're aging, we can still absorb new facts like a 20-year-old, and that it just may take us longer to retrieve it, but it is there. Learn, learn, learn. What that means is read, stay involved, try new things. You're never too old. You're never too set in your ways to try new things. The most reliable way to remember anything is to visualize it. That's the part of the brain that is most tied to the episodic memory. And so if you can visualize it, you can visualize your keys, the key ring, what's on it, the colors that are on it. Then what you can do when you can't find the keys, you can go back onto that visualization, and then that will help you remember where you put those keys. Manage stress, because not only does it wear down the body, it also wears down the brain as well. And why? The reason for that is because stress increases the amount of cortisol in the brain, and that cortisol over the course of time can actually affect the hippocampus, part of the memory part of the brain, to the point where the short-term memory becomes long-term memory, and then it takes us longer to think about it. Think about cortisol as vines that are basically going in, and they're going to be tangling things up. Use a high-potency multiple vitamin, mineral supplement, as it'll supply the antioxidants, anti-inflammatory nutrients that are needed, and then also essential fatty acids are very important to the well-being of the brain. You're never too old to start, and you're never too young to start, and then what you do is stay on it. And one of the things is flaxseed oil seems to really be able to protect the memory and the brain neurons and the membranes of around those neurons the way that it's needed. So things for you to be able to think about in the process of being able to look at the memory itself. I've got a very short period of time, but I do want to go in. Hi, Pat from Connecticut.
Hey, how are you? It's nice. I always feel so fortunate to connect with you.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry, I've only got a few minutes, so I apologize, okay. But I wanted to get you on, sweetie.
I'll be quick. You've always helped me with my dog. Today I'd like to ask about my health, and it's interesting. You're talking about memory. There's three bits of information I can give you. First one is in 2006, I went through 28 sessions of ECT, which,
wow,
personal thing, I feel like I shouldn't have, but it's only been this June that I'm starting to get some function of memory back. And
correct,
that's wonderful. But forgetting things, it's like being in a pitch dark room where there's no access to anything. So
correct,
I'm glad to see that that's moving. I'd also have arsenic poisoning, and I'm waiting to speak with my nutritionist about that. So I will get some help with that. And I went to sleep the other night asking for help on how to respond to a very negative boss. And the only thing I got was I was in a store reaching for some nitroglycerin tabs for the heart. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it was telling me I've got a problem with my heart or if that was relating to my question. That's okay. If you have anything that you see about my health, I'd appreciate.
I can. And the heart part of it with the nitroglycerin wasn't really telling you you have a heart issue. It's telling you, honey, that your heart is working very, very hard. There's a lot of, stress associated with it. And what it's doing is it's telling you in regards to your boss, sweetie, you need to follow your heart. Now, that is when I touch that heart part of you and following your heart, it's like a fist that opened up. Do you leave the job? Do you stay with the job? Do you talk to the boss, which you've tried before? It doesn't work. And then coming up with a new direction, look at something else, something that can distract you. All of those things can be very helpful. Mm-hmm. You do not have a heart issue. What you have is you have a lot of stress that mm-hmm. is going on. That's what it was telling you. The nitroglycerin is telling you that, sweetie, you need to balance. You look at yourself. Most important thing is, and I just got a high sign. I've got 20 seconds. Most important thing is, sweetie, go in and do something to build up your inner resources. You're running on fumes right now. And that's what it's saying to me. And that fumes is equating to being go back and touch your heart. What's important to you, not what's urgent. What do you want to do with your life? That's what you do, sweetie. You know, sorry to cut you off, but really, when I touch your heart, that's all it needed to hear, sweetie. So now you can get on the path and come from your heart, Pat. That's the most important thing. When you come from your head, honey, you're going to feel derailed. So always come from your heart.
That will help my rundown just coming.
It will. It will.
Thank you so much, Carol.
You are so welcome. My pleasure. Sorry to cut you short. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Join me next Wednesday. I'm going to see you on the radio. Have a wonderful week. Light and love to all of you.
You've been listening to The Carol Ryberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on...